Today's Monday, August 6th, the year 2001. We're in East Lansing. I'm Jeff Chunley, interviewing the former men's golf coach, Bruce Fossum, for the MSU Oral History Project. The sesquicentennial of the university is coming up in 2005, and this project is part of that sesquicentennial celebration. Coach Fossum, you can see we've got a tape recorder. Do you give us permission to record the interview today?
I certainly do.
I'd like to start first with some general questions about your personal background and educational career. Where were you born and raised, and where did you go to school?
I was born and raised in Ashland, Wisconsin, right up on Lake Superior. I went to high school there, and after high school, I graduated in 1945, and I decided to go right into the university at Wisconsin and Madison. And I was still 17, I couldn't get in the service yet. And I turned 18, I got a semester in, and I played on the basketball team, even as a freshman. And then in January of 1946, I went into the Navy. And I was in what they titled in a Naval Reserve because of an air deficiency, which I didn't even know about, by the way. And in August, I'm on board a small ship in the San Francisco Harbor, and I get word that all reservists have to be discharged by August 31st. So I was actually in the Navy for just about exactly 6 months.
6 months.
And it so happened that the timing of it was great because I was able to get back home and get right back into school again. Mm-hmm. And so I went to Wisconsin. I graduated in January of 1950. And during that time, I did play basketball at the university. I got a degree in Bachelor of Science. And my major was physical education and with a minor in science. And then in the year 49-50, I stayed on to do graduate work, and then I got my degree in January of 50. And during that year, I coached the freshman basketball team at Wisconsin. The head coach at that time was Harold Bud Foster, and he asked me to do that. And it was kind of a good break from the standpoint of establishing a resume and going on into coaching. And then I signed a contract to coach basketball and teach at West Bend High School in just outside of Milwaukee, which I did for 3 years. I coached basketball, cross country, and baseball. And I taught general science and some physical education. Then in 53, I moved to Green Bay West High School in Green Bay, Wisconsin. And I coached basketball and golf. The golf part of it is another story. I won't even go into that, except that I started as a caddy when I was 11 years old and became a decent player. And I never thought of teaching it until I got the Green Bay job, and then I kind of picked it up from there. But that's where I met Mary, and we were married in June 12th, 1954. And I stayed there, and I taught science, biology basically, and physical education, and I coached the sports that I said. Mm-hmm. I had success in basketball, and I got a call from Michigan State in the spring of late spring of 1959, and they wanted me to come over and interview for the job of assistant basketball coach. Forty Anderson was the head coach at that time, and Biggie Munn was the athletic director. And Mary and I, decided that we would do that. And so I took the job. They asked me if I wanted it, and I said, finally, yes. And then we moved over. I came over ahead of Mary in July, and then she moved over finally when we had a place to stay in August of 1959. And it turned out to be a wonderful move on both of our parts, I'll put it that way, because we had two girls at that time, and it was not a hard move at all from the standpoint of distance and so on. And we were close enough to Wisconsin where we could get back when we wanted to, but it provided an opportunity for me to learn under a very, very good head coach. And his offensive ideas in basketball at that time were top of the line, shall we put it. And it gave me that opportunity to learn under him. And my job basically was scouting and recruiting. And at that time, we didn't have video where they could exchange. Nowadays, I guess, all they do is, with all their modern electronics, is record all the games that teams are going to play and put it all together and break it down. And it's a fantastic thing they're doing today with that.
Did you use film but at that time? Or
we used film of our home games.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 16 millimeter. Mm-hmm. But my job was to go on the road and scout the team we were going to play the next time around. Mm-hmm. So I spent a lot of time traveling. And when I was home, obviously, I was coaching. And I also, all the roles then were, as coaches, were dual. We had to teach and coach. And I taught in the physical education department. And I taught whatever the department wanted me to teach, and it involved a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. And then in 1965, Forty was fired. And I was offered jobs, coaching jobs, which there's no need to get into, in basketball, but Biggie called me in and wanted to know if I would take over the golf program, because I had already been helping the golf coach. His name was Jack Brotzman, B-R-O-T-Z-M-A-N. And he was ready to retire, and Biggie, and I was in charge of the PE golf program, the learning program in our PE program. And Biggie just thought that would be a good thing, and I could take my recruiting skills and that type of thing along with my golf knowledge and put it to work, because the golf program was really down. They weren't doing much with it, and Biggie wanted to pick that up a little bit. So I did it. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I got a boost in my rank, shall we say, from assistant professor to associate prof. And that all happened in 65. But it kept me on a nine-month program instead of a 12-month program, plus the boost in rank and a boost in salary, too. But that put me into a whole new life. It was totally different. I got out of basketball because, well, for a lot of reasons, I felt that it would be really tough to move on into a major college situation. And you know how you are when you're young, you want to be the best. I mean, if you got the drive, which I had, and I just felt by taking over this golf thing that I could do that. And that's what happened. Mm-hmm. I just took it and ran with it and built it up, and it led to a lot of other good things. Mm-hmm. Things you probably have read about in that little book. But I gradually moved up the ranks from the standpoint of coaching in golf. And I became the chairman of the NCAA Golf Committee, and I worked through the ranks there. And I chaired that organization for, it was 5 years. And I became president of the Golf Coaches Association, and a lot of other good stuff, you know, mm-hmm. that went along with it.
Could I ask you about...
So that's about the history, you know, of mm-hmm.
Could I ask, we'll go back quite a bit, ask you some questions about your high, even going back to high school.
Sure.
What was it about, what'd you find in high school sports that was appealing?
Well, the competition. I was a good athlete. I was blessed, and in high school, I made the All-State team in basketball. I made the All-State team in football. I was a receiver on the football team. We played everything in those days. I ran track.
Football both ways.
Ran the hurdles and high jumped and track, and even played on a tennis team. I won 12 letters in high school. And but just the competition was something that I dearly loved. Yeah.
Was Bud Foster the coach at Wisconsin all the time you were there as a student?
Okay. Well, this is, of course, in high school.
Right. Yeah. But later on in college.
Yeah. He was my coach.
He was your coach.
All the way through, yeah. And
what was Wisconsin's records when you were, I don't mean the exact numbers, but did you win the Big Ten?
Or? In 1947, we won the Big Ten championship. And that's the last conference championship that Wisconsin won.
Oh.
In fact, in 97, we had a reunion of that team back in Madison, and six of us showed up. Mm-hmm. Some had passed away, and a lot of the guys that were on that team were really true veterans, guys that had been through a lot of stuff in the war, and really tough group. I was kind of the youngest one because I was lucky to be in the service for such a short period of time, but
Did that service?
And it was a wild and woolly group, but boy, they could play. Yeah, we played.
And you played as a freshman?
I played as a freshman before I went in the Navy for a semester.
That's right.
And when I got back out, and the first year I got back, all the other guys were coming back, and so I played JV ball for 1 year. They did that then. And then I played varsity the last 2 years. So,
were there, when you went into teaching, was there any, did you have any point in your life when you thought that you did want to be a teacher and a coach, or?
Well, I knew that when I was in high school.
Okay.
I knew I wanted to coach when I was in high school. And for the same reason, it was the competitive attitude that I took on, but I wanted to work with young people. In fact, my high school coach, Roy Melvin by name, great man. He just did so much, not only for me, but all the kids that he coached, encouraged me to do that. He says, you're good at it. He had me working with kids when I was at the high school level, working with 7th and 8th grade kids and so on. And he said, if you want to, you know, feel like it, you're good at it, you should go into it.
So he was an important early mentor?
Oh, yeah. Very important. Yeah, between him and my father, those were the two guys.
Was your father an educator?
No, my father had his own business. He sold and repaired radios, sold and repaired bicycles. He started off around the First World War with a motorcycle shop. And then as motorcycles kind of petered out when the automobile was coming in strong, and then he got into the bicycles. And in the service, he had been in the Army, he learned radio. And he became very good at that. And we sold fishing tackle, and it was kind of a mixture of stuff that we did, but we repaired outboard motors. But he was a fly fisherman. That's where that comes in.
I see.
And every Sunday was our Sunday. We go fishing. But that's kind of how I was raised.
He encouraged you in sports too, your father?
Oh, positively. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he was a pretty good athlete himself. And when he was younger, they didn't have all the opportunity that we started to have a little later. And no, he was very encouraging.
Do you remember, you obviously played Michigan State at the, anything you remember about when Michigan State came to play Wisconsin?
Yep. I had one of my best games. I think I scored 16 in that game. That's when they had Branham and those guys. 48, I think it was. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they played them.
You had been on the campus then as a student. You'd been here as a student playing or in Jenison or?
No. I don't remember playing in Jenison.
Okay.
I'm talking about playing them at Madison. Mm-hmm. That's the only game I can remember.
Okay. Well, that sounds like a good one to remember.
Yeah.
Your years as assistant coach, you talked about some of your duties and that sort of
sure.
thing. Were there any of MSU stars that you recruited personally?
Yeah.
At the time?
Well, yeah, there were quite a few players mm-hmm. that came in. The basketball teams we had in the early 60s were middle of the road type. We were a very high scoring team. Mm-hmm. Remember I alluded to the fact that Forty was a very good offensive coach. And we lacked a good defensive philosophy that prevented us from being really good. But I didn't recruit Horace Walker, but he was here when I first came. And Lance Olson and Tom Rand, who eventually coached here too, by the way, they coached the freshman team, each one of them. They both went on to become very wealthy people in other works, you know. Mm-hmm. But the one I remember the most is Stan Washington. He was really truly a great basketball player. I can name a lot of others, but I remember Stan so well. He lives in Lansing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and his son played at Western Michigan. Yeah. But there were, as I say, the recruiting classes for 5 years, I recruited all of them. Mm-hmm. Pete Gent was another one. Recruited Pete. Pete went on and played football, by the way, with the Dallas Cowboys. And he wrote a couple of books on professional football.
What was it like playing in Jenison?
Great. Oh, yeah. You had the crowd right there, and the floor was raised. It was kind of unique. Of course, we had that at Wisconsin, too. But it was a tight crowd, and the place was always filled up and raucous, you know, and the band was right into the deal. And it was more like a big high school place to play instead of a big, you know, the arenas we play in today, they're all like Breslin, mm-hmm. and everything is a little more distant. And that was wonderful to play there.
Have you kept up with basketball as a fan and watching?
Yeah, strictly. I continued when I became the golf coach. They wanted me to continue teaching. I was teaching the basketball coaching course. I was teaching teaching techniques courses in basketball and golf. In fact, I started a course in coaching and teaching golf when I became the golf coach. Mm-hmm. And so my teaching assignments changed considerably when I became the golf coach. It was more lecture, demonstration, that type of thing. And we more of a professional attitude in the teaching rather than in something in the gym or mm-hmm. in the bowling alley or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. And so that I did continue that. Along with coaching the golf team. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I would have done it without the teaching part of it. Nowadays, the coaches now, like Stacy with the golf team, the ladies, and Mark with the men's, that's all they do. Mm-hmm. They just coach, recruit, boom, that's it. But all of our guys, like Stan Drillback and Grady, and Grady Penninger, and you probably talk with him or will talk with him, and Finley Collins and even Duffy and the guy, everybody taught classes. Rather unique. And of course, it was all men's athletics then. There were no sponsored women's athletics. And so it was kind of more of a fraternity of coaches, and we were very close. And we had a lot of parties, a lot of fun together, and the wives got to know each other. And a lot different than today. Mm-hmm. Not that then was any better than it is now, but it was a lot tighter, a lot mm-hmm. close. Everybody was really close.
The we talk a little bit about your golf career. Mm-hmm. What would you say? Did you have any guiding strategy for in your approach to golf?
Any what?
A guiding strategy. Obviously, score well.
Yeah. Well, in coaching at the college level, the whole key is in recruiting. Hmm. I could give you a couple of analogies, but I'll leave those out because I'd have to use words that wouldn't fit too well. But you have to have talent to begin with, and therefore the biggest job is recruiting. The second is obviously your knowledge of the game so that you can teach. And I thought I was pretty good at that, and I have become much better since. Since I started, that is. Mm-hmm. But I read a lot. I talked with good teaching professionals a lot. I exchanged coaching information with some of the top coaches in the country. And you just get better and better at what you do. But it comes right back to recruiting kids that had talent. And then I always tried to recruit young men that were good kids, good competitors, good kids. Obviously, they had to be good golf players. You wouldn't touch them. But if they were snotty-nosed kids like a lot of kids are, especially in golf, because it's such an eye sport, that I wouldn't touch them. I just didn't want them around. So. And that paid off too. Good athletes, good loyal kids, kids that wanted to help each other and root for each other and work hard. And again, they had good talent to begin with, and so it's a matter of polishing it and teaching them more about playing the game instead of how to swing a golf club.
Mm-hmm. What in the early years you had some success,
mm-hmm.
and and you said you had to rebuild or build
yeah.
program.
Yeah.
What was your approach when you how'd you accomplish that? Obviously.
Well, the first thing I did was organize it more on the basis of any organized athletic team. Before, they were kind of on their own and did what they wanted in the winter and so on. But I organized winter program, the first time they'd ever done that, mm-hmm. With weight training and the whole business. I had done that at the high school level, and I couldn't imagine them not doing it here. And yet, when I put in the training program, I made reference to, we had a physical therapist here on campus, and his name was Jim Allen, and he was good. And I went to Jim and I said, Jim, I want to develop a program at this level involving stretching, weight training, and cardiovascular, and would you help me? And he watched me swing the golf club a few times and develop some exercises that would specify in the golf swing. Mm-hmm. And we put together a program. I wish I'd brought some because I still have copies of it.
Uh-huh.
But stuff that every team does today, but we were doing that back in the 60s. Mm-hmm. And the kids loved it. They'd never gone through anything like this, these golf players. It wasn't like, some of them, of course, had played basketball and football. Mm-hmm. They said, yeah, this is great. You know, we did stuff together, and we trained hard and under a very controlled program. And the program just got better and better and better and better. And we got it to a point where we won a Big Ten title in 69, and then we kept on playing very well. The problem in those days, golf wasn't of the popularity that it is today, and there weren't that many good players. And mm-hmm. so the recruiting process, it was tough. There was a lot of competition for the best players. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose.
Well, did the southern schools have an advantage?
Terrific advantage, mm-hmm. because in those days, to get on a pro tour, you really had to be at the top of your game. And a lot of good northern players went south for that reason, so they could play all the time.
Mm-hmm.
That was an obvious thing that you competed against.
When you took over, what schools were the powerhouses?
Purdue. In the Big Ten.
Yeah.
Purdue was strong, and Indiana.
Who were their coaches?
Bob Fitch was the coach at Indiana. And Sam Voinoff, V-O-I-N-O-F-F, was the coach at Purdue. I told Sam when I took the job, and kiddingly, I said, I'm coming after you, Sam. And we got to be really good friends, and he was a gruff old guy, but boy, he was just a marvel.
Did you coaches play? Were there any outings or anything that you played, or no?
When you go to a golf tournament, that's work time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In those early years, in contrast to maybe later, you said you started the winter program. Well, how did you approach practice, and what was the typical way you got your players ready?
If there was something general that the team was lacking, maybe say short game, whatever, we'd schedule a group meeting, and we'd go to around the practice screen, and we'd talk about it, and we did a lot of that together. The teams were relatively small, and you could get 8 or 10 kids around a grain and work on something. But I kept it pretty individual. If somebody needed help with something, we'd go to work on it. Mm-hmm. In the wintertime, everybody did the same thing. Mm-hmm. And we'd hit ball. We had indoor nets and over in the IM building and so on. But gradually, we increased those facilities and got those better, too. So. And then we'd go on a spring training trip together down in the Carolinas and try to get our games in shape for the season. In those days, too, we didn't play much in the fall. Nowadays, they split season. They play a lot of important tournaments in the fall. And then in the spring, they play and lead up to the conference championship and the NCAAs. See?
Is the NCAA in June, or is that early?
Late May.
Late May.
Yeah, okay. Late May. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then I started the tournament here, and I call it the very first year that I coached, and I call it the Spartan Invitational. And in 1995, they changed the name of it to my name, and they call it the Bruce Fossen Invitational. And they did the same thing with Mary, by the way, and in her tournament. Is in the fall.
Who are some of your, I don't mean for you to remember everyone or exclude anyone, but some of your memorable players?
Well, the best player that ever played at Michigan State is Len Jansen. Yeah. And Len is the head pro up at Egypt Valley. And he was All-American 3 times. He played through 1970. That particular team was the one that had won the Big Ten the previous year, and there were a number of great players on that team. Rick Wolfe, W-O-U-L-F-E, was a great player. Graham Cook. Rick, by the way, I keep in touch with these guys. Mm-hmm. And he's a civil lawyer down in Fort Lauderdale, and he's a big-time court lawyer. He's good, too.
Still keep up with his game?
Graham Cook, mm-hmm. With an E on the end. He was an All-American, and he's a golf course architect in Canada. I could name a ton of them. I'm just naming you some All-Americans that mm-hmm. we had. Brad Hyland, he's in insurance and real estate down in Orlando, Florida. I saw him a couple of years ago. We played golf together down in Orlando. Mm-hmm.
Did many of your players go to the pros?
Some were on and off a little bit. Not anybody regular. No.
Okay.
No. Most of my guys, well, a lot of them are still in golf. That are golf professionals, but. A lot of them are professional men, lawyers, a lot of lawyers and mm-hmm. and doctors and almost all of them highly successful in what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Really, I'm very proud of them.
The
my son played for me too.
Oh, he did.
Dad. Oh, yeah, Bob. Mm-hmm. He played from 1981 to 85.
When did you start him with a golf club in his hand?
Oh gosh, when he was 1 and a half, he was had a little cut-off club hitting balls against the couch.
Is there?
Yeah. But he became a great player too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did he continue in golf?
Well, he still plays a lot. He
still plays.
Yeah, he's with an investment firm here in town. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What's it like coaching your son?
Oh, we got along good. there was none of that. He had to earn his way, mm-hmm. And he did that. See, in golf, if you're in doubt about two people playing, you put them on the golf course and let them go play. Mm-hmm. And the winner makes it, and the loser doesn't. It's that simple. Mm-hmm. You let the golf clubs do the talking, and he had to go through all that, see? Mm-hmm. But he ended up playing a lot, and up to the point he graduated, he had played in more golf tournaments than any player in Michigan State history.
Wow.
Then another kid came along right after that played in more, mm-hmm. a boy by the name of John Kozier.